Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am with someone that has been nice enough to give his time to the show a couple times, and the one and only Michael Grange of Sportsnet. Thanks so much, Grange, for taking the time and doing this. Did you feel like you had any bit of break since the NBA season? You're writing about golf, like you're a man of
I mean,
everything.
yeah, no, it's been fine. I mean, it's nice to sort of not be on, the schedule, an NBA team schedule, and a little bit of is just kind of making work sometimes and just trying to keep up with things. But it's definitely a little bit of a lull, and it'll be it's gonna get busier here in as late June and July and into early August. It should be a pretty busy summer in a good way. So looking forward to it.
You have like notes for like Raptors free agency and Canada basketball kind of intertwined at this point with like July 1st, a couple days away.
Just in my head, all in my head. We're good.
Awesome. You've been on the Canada basketball beat for a long time, and of course the Raptors as well, but some pretty big news with the training camp roster being announced, and essentially everyone, there's some guys that are unhappy they weren't invited, and I'm sure we'll get into that as well, but all the big names, SGA, Jamal Murray, Wiggins, RJ, I mean, there's so many Canadian great basketball players out there. What was just your reaction to the fact that in the end, essentially everyone that anyone wanted to be there showed up?
Well, I guess what was a little surprising was that there were no surprises, right? And so, I mean, other than Corey Joseph not getting a camp invite, that was a little bit of a shocker, maybe. But but when you look at players that they were really counting on, they got all the key figures back from the bronze medal team last year, and I think if we had been having this conversation and almost any time since then, you'd certainly be hopeful that Jamal Murray would make himself available and be available and healthy. That seems to be the case. Andrew Wiggins has always been kind of a, if he was available, there might be some conversation as to how important he would be. But I think Rowan Barrett put it really well, like, when he's healthy and he's locked in, I mean, he's really good. And so, if you presume if he's gonna put himself out there and be part of this, he's gonna come to play. And typically, Andrew Wiggins has played really well when he has played for Canada. So, and then it was gonna be who else might you get? And I think the way Andrew Nembhard obviously was, always gonna be on people's radar, but the way he played this season and especially the way he performed in the playoffs, he became a must-have. And I think that he again is committed and there. That's great, right? And so I think you're at 10 essential pieces. Like, these are the guys you really wanted to have. And and then you've got another 10 guys kind of battling for two spots. And you can go through that list of guys, and a lot of them would have all kinds of contributions they could make. So I think a very positive day for Rowan Barrett, for Canada basketball generally.
How much, like, when you think about, I think in Steve Nash, when he took charge of Canada basketball, almost a decade ago, talked about like, getting that gold medal in 2020, and that didn't obviously come to fruition. How cool, like, I guess, how much of a testament is it to maybe the program that they were able to get everyone essentially that they wanted to come? Like, what do you think maybe changed compared to past years? Is it just as simple as it's the Olympics and people love the Olympics and they want to play in the Olympics, or is there maybe something more there that they kind of got the buy-in of really everyone to come and play for Canada?
I mean, I think there's a few different things. This crew of guys, obviously with Shea, RJ, Nikhil, like, those guys were in before there was any guarantee of success. And so, and I think I always say that, like, Canada basketball has done a great job creating an environment where, high-end professional athletes can come and feel comfortable and cared for. Like, you know, that's a big one, and it's expensive, right? You know, all of a
Yep.
sudden you got guys making $100, $200 million. Well, they don't want to stay at X hotel. They want to stay, well, maybe they do want to stay at the X hotel, but they want to, you know, they want to, they want, they're used to being traveling a certain way. They're used to eating a certain way. They're used to being trained a certain way. They're used to, and all that costs money, you know? And so, that Canada Basketball has been able to pull together enough resources to, you know, create an environment that's those guys want to be a part of, is that's important. The fact that they can create a somewhat similar set of circumstances on the women's side, which is also important.
Yeah.
You know, again, that costs more. You can't do one and not take care of the other. And then, you know, but then the final piece is so people are welcome when they come, and then, but they want to come, they want to compete, they want to do something great that's, you know, within the player. And then I think the last hurdle is it's a formula that's proven to work. They had tremendous success in this qualifying process and at the World Cup. And, you know, so yeah, people like to be part of a winner, and, you know, who doesn't want to say you're an Olympian, right? Like, it's, you know, one of the great titles any athlete can ever have. So, you know, so there, that kind of gets you over the hump maybe with the last couple of guys. And, you know, it makes for some tough decisions, obviously, too.
I think Brian Windhorst always says, don't tell the players they're going to Lille for the beginning of the tournament, but Paris isn't a bad place to go for the Olympics as well. I guess with that, you know, you alluded to it, but the kind of they had the core 14 that was in place, and obviously, you know, there's a lot of players on this list that are presumably on the team that weren't part of that core, and even guys at the FIBA World Cup as well. How difficult and maybe how challenging will it be, do you think, to bring in a guy like Andrew Wiggins, Jamal Murray into that core of SGA, Dylan Brooks, RJ, Nikhil, the seven NBA guys that were at the FIBA World Cup?
I don't think it's going to be too big a problem. You know, the Canadian, as much as the Canadian basketball community has grown and evolved, is still pretty small. Most of these guys have encountered each other, either training, workouts, national team experiences, growing up, you know, AU basketball. Like, you know, there's, I don't think any of these guys are strangers to each other. And conversely, I think many of them are very, very good friends and have a lot of history with each other. And so, when you're talking about the personalities involved, you know, Andrew Wiggins, you know, I've never heard anyone say they don't like Andrew Wiggins, right? Like, he's just a pretty chill character. He's not one to come and, you know, step on toes and make a big deal out of everything. He just, you know, it's just, is Andrew going to come and compete or not? And I think all those guys understand, and I'm sure they were consulted. In fact, I know they were consulted, you know, on some of these additions. You know, they know, players know, and they know what a guy can do and why it's important to have him. Jamal Murray, again, like, he walks into the gym, again, he's familiar anyway, but he's carrying a championship ring, all kinds of, you know, those guys all know what he's done in playoff games. And so it's not hard to convince. I think, you know, there probably will be some, you know, kind of smoothing out to do in terms of, you know, last year with that World Cup team, the roles were so well defined. It was Shai and everyone, you know, what can we do to support Shai? And now, you know, there's other guys. Jamal can certainly take over a game. Andrew at times can take over a game or parts of a game. And so that's going to be up to Jordy and up to those guys to sort of figure out the on-court stuff. But I think the off-court stuff won't be an issue. And it's such a big event. You know, nobody wants to be the guy who's kind of pouting during the Olympics, and not that I think that's an issue anyway. So I think from that point of view, it should not be a big problem.
I guess with that, like, just because of the grandeur of the Olympics, I guess what are the expectations for this group in your mind? Is it like I keep saying gold? I think that should be, you know, what they go for. Maybe they don't get it. It's not a disappointment by no means. But do you think that's, you know, if you look at it, I see Bill Simmons and all these Americans, John Hollinger, getting a bit scared about the USA playing against Canada. Do you think it's kind of gold, as the mindset for this team?
Well, I mean, they have one of the top five players in the world, maybe one of the top three players in the world. And then they have, you know, a proven NBA champion as your 1A, so to speak. in Jamal, and another NBA champion in his prime in Andrew Wiggins. And then you have, after that, I think eight guys who were either starters or rotation players in the NBA. And no other team other than the US has that. They do have some continuity. It's not as much as maybe you'd like, but I mean, I think it's comparable probably to most other countries. And yeah, and they're coming off being the third best team in the world. So I think there's no reason why they shouldn't believe they can win a gold medal. But, you know, and I'm not, you know, it's this is a very, very tough tournament. And, you know, you're in a pool with Australia, who is, you know, I don't think as good a team, but they're very good. They've got a ton of history as a group. They're tough. You're in with one of probably Greece or Slovenia. You know,
Not easy.
Giannis or Luka. Like, I mean, you know, anything can happen. Of course, Canada beat Slovenia with Luka last year, but still Luka Doncic. And then, you know, then the other team in that pool is either Spain or maybe Bahamas. And, you know, it could be in Poland, maybe, I'm not sure. But from that other Olympic qualifying tournament, and Spain's obviously, you know, one of the top teams in the world, has been forever. Again, a team Canada has beaten recently. And, you know, Bahamas is a complete unknown, but like they're going to be bringing some significant NBA talent. So, you know, these are all kind of one game showdowns. So, you know, I guess my expectation is they get out of the group, and then it's, you hope you play great. You know, I think it'd be very disappointing to have a team this complete and not get into a medal game. But, you know,
If yeah,
things
if you play
happen.
France or
Things happen. These
yeah,
games are
Serbia.
40-minute games, and it's a short 3-point line, and it's wild what could happen.
Yes.
So, you know
Yeah.
better than me at the World Cup last year. So, yeah, but it, so yeah, I think they should go there with a the mindset that yeah, they can win a gold medal, or they should win a gold medal. And I guess my realistic expectation is play for a medal. And I think if they get into that final four, it'd be a tremendous accomplishment, whatever happened after that.
And I'm sure you feel this way to some extent. It feels like it's finally just they've had the talent for so long. And I think you had a tweet about, imagine 10 years ago what, Canada having like a medal worthy Olympic team, and now they have that. It seems as though now maybe this will be the kind of the onset of Canada basketball becoming more popular, but also expectations that every tournament, the men's team and the women's team, who are on the rise as well, go to an Olympics, a World Cup, and if you don't get a medal, it's a bit of a disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, it's a good problem to have. I mean, in fairness, those expectations have been there for a while, right? Like, I mean, and, you know, I think the tweet you're referring to is, you know, I think if you go back to 2015, when they just missed qualifying for the 16 games in
Brazil.
London, and 2016 was, yeah, you're right, Brazil, my bad.
Huh.
And, you know, you look at the names, the kind of guys who've kind of filtered through, who are part of maybe that team in 15 or have been in the NBA since, who aren't in this training camp, like let alone on the team. They're not even at training camp. It's staggering. You
Yeah.
know, it's like Nick Stauskas was number 8 overall pick. Anthony Bennett, number 1 overall pick. Tristan Thompson, you know, still an effective player in his 13th year. Corey Joseph, still an effective player in his 13th year. You know, you go through some of the young guys who, you know, aren't invited to this camp, or, you know, in Omax Prosper and Leonard Miller and, you know, Delano Banton, Eugene Omoro, I'm gonna blow his name,
Omar, yeah, Omaru.
Omoruyu.
There you
You
go.
know, those are guys who, you know, if you had said 10 years ago, there's four guys who were in the NBA currently, and none of them are going to be on your national team, not even on your train in your training camp. It's
Unbelievable.
it can happen. And you know, and then you got Shaedon Sharpe and Ben Mathurin, who are kind of ruled out through injury. Like that's an inc like those 11 guys. Chris Boucher is another name. If you took those 11 guys and made them a national team, like they'd be pretty good.
It'd be
Like
pretty good.
they'd be really good. Yet they're not good enough in theory to be in this camp. I mean, it's just a kind of an insane,
I
paid for Canadian basketball.
I think, I don't know if you said it, but for a while in like that kind of from 2015 to 2020, we kept talking about the Canada basketball community that we're going to cut an NBA-er, and it seems in a sense that time has come. I mean, maybe they won't in the end, but they have
Well, they
12.
have. I mean, they've already cut Corey. And, it's interesting now, Chris Boucher is indicating he's upset he didn't get an invitation. Tristan kind of indicating he's upset he didn't get an invitation. I don't know all the circumstances around that, but, it's basically based on what they put out on social media. I'm not an expert in interpreting eye emojis and everything, but the suggestion would be that they might have wanted to be there and they were told no thank you. And like again, I go to I
Crazy.
just can't believe it that that's where we are right now. It's a good problem to have, and it's not an easy situation for Rowan Barrett and Jordy Fernandez to navigate, but I think there's only 12 guys on that team, and you can only you got to be pretty. There's not a lot of room for warm and fuzzy feelings.
I have to ask. I think it's like my duty to ask you about the Corey Joseph story that you had, and obviously you had a chat with him after him being cut from the team.
Not
Obviously,
invited to camp would
I'm
be
not
the.
invited to camp. Yeah, my bad. Just w what? Maybe just talk about that story, and maybe is that something where you talk about maybe not too warm and fuzzy with their feelings, Canada basketball, to some of the players. Is that kind of just a shift, and maybe talk about that story with where Joseph was coming from in terms of not being invited to camp.
Yeah, I think he was legitimately very upset, and I think just talking to some people on the Canada basketball side, look, they don't want to get into a situation where they're,
Going at.
going at any of their players. Like it's just not, it's just not an opportunity for them to do that. I think if. I think Corey at time, he's in camp last year. I don't think he had a great camp. He had some back issues. Could that be because he wasn't in peak fitness? I don't know. But the reality is, when you go back to his time with Canada basketball, like I can know I've looked at this the other day. Like he's given up significant time in multiple off seasons for over a decade. And like, these trips aren't like, we're going to go to Indianapolis and play a weekend tournament. Like it's, I
China,
think, it's
Philippines.
Argentina, it's Puerto Rico, it's China, it's Philippines, it's Mexico City, like for extended periods. Like they take a lot. The competitions are long, the training camps take time, the travel's difficult. And a lot, I think from Corey's point of view, I think his disappointment, he was mad, he was unhappy, he was sad too. Is comes from a couple of things. And one is he's at a crossroads in his career and he's very, very determined to extend his career. And and an athlete gets to that point and it gets really scary really fast. I remember seeing Corey in January in Golden State, and Steve Kerr couldn't say enough good things about him. He was looking like he was set to become one of those guys who's part of part of your kind of leadership group, kind of bringing along younger players for years to come. He's got tremendous pedigree, experience, personality, and literally overnight, he's traded and waived. The Warriors needed to save some luxury tax. They had a young guy coming up, and we get traded to Indianapolis, and they need a roster spot. And so, I think that really rocked Corey. I think it shook him. And he's saying to me, he went and has been pretty much since that happened back in February, he's been working on his health, his fitness, his body, making sure those these back issues are cleared up. And he's very, very hungry to compete. And so I think in that context, For him not getting an invitation, I feel like I think he should have had an invitation, and he had enough money in the bank with this organization. And I think part of what happened was, when you look at that guard rotation, I don't think he makes it. And so you're stuck with, bringing a guy into camp, and no matter how good his camp is, he's probably going to get cut. And how disruptive is that then? And so it's kind of, you bite the bullet now and you make it happen. But that's, again, I'm not faulting anyone for this, but and I'm sure if Corey was maybe going to do things over again, maybe his approach last summer would have been a little different. I can't really speak to that exactly, but the reality is he's been there and he's done it, and he wanted the chance to compete, and on that basis, he probably deserved one. But again, we're just in a very unique space in Canadian basketball.
Do you think it's almost because you look at Dylan Brooks, the way he played at that tournament and then translated into the NBA season, especially at the beginning being so hot from three. RJ Barrett played well at the World Cup and then with the Raptors was unbelievable. That
Oh, you go
now
down the list. I think almost
yeah,
every
Nikhil,
who I think everyone who was on that World Cup team, who went on and was part of an NBA rotation, had as good a year as they've ever had, maybe a career year, like Nikhil did. I would say Dylan was, you could probably argue that it was maybe Dylan's best year.
A
Shea, obviously, and Kelly had a
RJ.
really good, solid year. I'm struggling to think of any of them
Maybe
who,
not Powell just because of where he's
well, he
at.
wasn't in a rotation. So, I don't think it's, you can correlate there. And obviously RJ, he ended up starting really well. He had a bit of a, those migraine issues in New York. And then when he eventually came to Toronto, he was great. So, and if you talk to Steve Nash, like, he would tell you, like, the foundation of his MVP, his all-star, then MVP years, were the 99 and 2000 summers with the Olympic team. And, that kind of really was where he sort of was able to unleash his game and kind of rejuvenate himself after a lot of injury struggles. And, kind of, I think, arguably created a new level of confidence, because, he almost got that team to a medal game. So, I think it's a pretty good advertisement for guys to come out and compete in the summer.
I guess just kind of moving forward a little bit with the team, of course, like I'm kind of curious that you talk about like Sharp Mathurin, like what is the like in there's a World Cup in 3 years and I'm not trying to go too far, but you know they had that core 14 and then they had the core that kind of went to that went to Jakarta and to the Philippines for the World Cup, but now it's a it seems like a almost like an additive team this year with a couple more players. What do you think this has done to maybe change the future for players wanting to play for Canada in 2027 and hopefully they make the Olympics in 2028.
Yeah, well, I mean, success sells, right? So now you're joining a program that's hopefully, they're going to come back with medals at consecutive events, and be celebrated for that. And so they want to be part of it. They know they're joining something. I think in other years, when you look at back, that World Cup in 2019, right? And there's supposed to be a pretty good team, supposed to be a lot of guys who were into it, and one by one they dropped off. Corey Joseph didn't drop off; he went, and I think, and you end up kind of looking around and go, "What am I doing this for?" Right? Like, you go over there, travel to China's tough; it's a tough place to be for 2 3 weeks at a time, and you go and finish 19th and or whatever they did, and you feel bad. People, everyone else feels bad. Like, it's bad. So that's not much of a sales pitch. Come and get your ass kicked. Like, don't worry, everyone else is coming. They told me, and then they all bail. Like, that's now it's the opposite, right? So you're gonna, in that virtuous cycle. I do think that one of the byproducts of how this has gone down is it's gonna be hard to declare a summer core again. The People go, sure, yeah, count me in, and then do whatever they need to, right? Like it was an admirable concept and probably worth introducing, but you know, when you look at it, you know, it was the participation was pretty perfunctory by most of the key guys, and or not at all by some of the key guys. And so, you know, and then you have, you know, multiple guys coming in who weren't part of the core at all. So I think, you know, that's going to have to be rethought. But, you know, I think, you know, you maybe you get to, maybe you're in a point now where your pool's a little broader and the communication is pretty plain. Like we want you to be part of it. The more you're part of it, the more likely you'll be included. And, you know, go from there. And hopefully they'll have enough players that they can sort of function on that level.
You talked about like with the 2019 World Cup and everyone just dropping out like flies at the end, but how much do you think with not just this summer but really last summer that the fact that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander said, I'm in, how much is that just a game changer for the program more than just even a couple guys saying yes, but knowing that one of the five best players in the world is going to play and how that includes kind of brings in other players to want to play for Canada.
Oh, it's giant. It's giant. And you know, when Shai put his hand up to say that, like he wasn't at that time, he wasn't a first team All NBA player 2 times in a row. Like he was an emerging star, but you know, he wasn't, he wasn't what we know him to be now. But yeah, no, it also helps that, you know, Shai puts his hand up. That means Akil's probably going to play.
Yes,
So
that's true.
that helps. But no, I think it's like in anything, right? It's when your best player is 100% committed, then it just is so much easier to look to anyone else and say, well, what's your excuse? And you know, that's the old, you know, Greg Popovich and Tim Duncan, right? Like, you know, Tim Duncan got yelled at as much as anybody, and so what's in, okay, well, if he's yelling at Tim, I guess I better listen, because you know, he's not going to be scared to yell at me, that's for sure. So, not that I don't think, you know, Jordy Fernandez is yelling at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but the point being is, you know, teams are reflect their superstar. And you know, and I think as good as, and this whole core of guys, like you've been around them, you know, there's not a bad apple in the bunch, right? And it much sort of, I don't know, a publicity or attention that Dylan Brooks gets. I mean, the guy's a great dude. Anyone who knows him knows he's a great dude. People
Great
love him.
teammate.
His teammates love him. So, you know, and on down the list, RJ, Nikhil, Kelly, like Dwight, like these are all just people you want to be around. And so I think it creates, as I said, it just builds on itself.
I have two fun questions for you before I transition a little bit to the Raptors. And the first one is who is your starting five going into to Paris? Because I think that's like obviously there's two guys that are locked in and then the three other spots are pretty wide open.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd probably go
You on
Shai,
the spot.
Jamal, RJ, Dylan, and Shai, I can't even count. Shai, Jamal, RJ, Dylan, and Kelly.
Ellie? Okay. That's a
And
pretty.
that's going to be something interesting right off the bat, right? Because, you know, I presume these conversations have been had. I'm sure they've been had. But, you know, how do you not start Dylan Brooks just because Andrew Wiggins shows up? You can't. And so, you know, people need to accept that. And you know, and if they do, then it should be should bode well for success. But if it becomes a problem, it's going to be a problem.
And the other one that is, I think, going to be really interesting, especially in those big games, is at end of the game, game on the line, who takes the last shot, right? Because Jamal Murray made a bunch of buzzer beaters in his career, and Shai, he didn't have a buzzer beater at the World Cup, and with well, he has a couple with OKC, but he's pretty clutch himself too.
I want the ball in Shai's hands, and I know he'll make the right play. And if Jamal Murray is your lurking on the weak side or whatever you want to do it, I mean, good luck defense, right? Like, what are you going to do? How many bodies can you throw at Shea and still knowing that Jamal Murray is out there? I mean, it can work the other way too. And certainly Shea's a good enough shooter that he's going to have a little bit of gravity. But I think, the ball in Shea's hands with Jamal Murray stretching the defense and then attacking off the catch is, man, that looks pretty good to me.
It's going to be so much fun, and I'm going to say they have the best backcourt in the world. I'm just going to put it out there, yeah, I'm gonna transition as best I can to the Raptors, Michael. And what was this season like? Just to cover a team that was quite woeful for so long. How do you find stories? What's that challenge like for you to, in March and April when the team's on a well, I, what was it? A 11, 12 game losing 15.
They lost 19 out of 21.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird. Sometimes it's easier, right? Because there's no illusions anymore of you really it's sometimes you guys are a little more accessible and there's a little less going on, a little less pressure and earnestness. It's like, okay, yeah, let's talk. And then, and every season has themes and things that emerge. And I guess the story I ended up doing at the end of the season on Grady Dick is, I was really happy with that. And then it was kind of a great opportunity to find a little bit of kind of ray of sunshine in a pretty gloomy picture. And and then the way Grady's story, his season went was, it was pretty much a novel, right? Like it was
Yeah.
started with great hope and disappeared into horrible tragedy, and then there was redemption, right? So kind of can't mess with that. And so yeah, I mean, it gets pretty tiring going to games that aren't, well, not tiring, like it's like, believe me, I know people have real jobs. So it gets a little like not
It's
as
just,
much, there's not as much like electricity in the air, let's just say, on Tuesday night in the 13th
Charlotte, yeah.
Street or whatever. But when you feel for the coaching staff trying to, keep professional when things are kind of falling around them. But it's the good news about doing this as long as I have is for you're a little bit dispassionate, right? Like if guys are winning, hey, there's great stories that you can tell that way. When things are going in the toilet, there's interesting stories because of that. And my job is just to tell them, find them, and I don't like it's more fun generally to be around teams that win because people are generally in a better mood. But that's it's not as bad as you might think when they're losing.
I remember, I think last time we spoke, you I think it was right when the season had kind of started and Grady Dick had been okay, and then he really, I think, plateaued and dipped after we
There was no
spoke.
plateau.
There
It was
was no
just
plateau, just a fall. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember you were pretty, you felt just being around the team and seeing him work. And obviously, you know him even better now, but that he had that work ethic and that things would kind of turn around. Maybe just talk about that conversation with him and maybe the kind of player he is behind the scenes and how you kind of believe in him just because you've seen that work, and that he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's like he kind of it's interesting, he's basically within like a few months, he's the same age as my son. And so it was interesting kind of seeing him and then through and then kind of
Through the lens of your
through the lens of my of a 20-year-old kid. And and so on some levels, like it was like, yeah, like this is very familiar to me. And on other levels, you recognize that these guys are really special, and you kind of they and as much as Grady comes off as and is a really sincere, down to earth, good dude, he's an extraordinarily unique bundle of characteristics and traits that has allowed him to be get to where he is. And it's not just working hard. Most everyone in that league works hard, but it's working with detail. It's and it's but I think the fundamental thing is just a unshakable inner confidence. There's just just a belief that it's going to be fine, you know, because it's always been fine and it will be fine. And it's just, you know, and I think that belief gets tested, obviously. And some guys crack, you know, I think that does happen. But, you know, the ones who make it don't. And, you know, watching Grady, you know, when he was struggling, and this was concurred with guys who actually work with him versus people who just watch him work. You know, there was never, you know, I remember talking to some of the veterans, and they never saw his demeanor change. Like I said, were you ever worried? And they said no, because, you know, he came into the gym, same guy. He put in his same effort. He put in his same thing. There was no moping and sulking and all of that. And you know, I think there was a little bit of, you know, there might have been some kind of calls to mom, you know, and you know, but I don't think he was it ever really became a problem. And so you're watching all that. And then, you know, when you see little flashes of, you know, when he was playing well, showed well, you're like, man, this guy's got some real tools. And so I think what was really interesting there was you know, when he after he came up from the G League and he started, you know, started getting really steady minutes. You know, he shot the ball great. That's step one, right? That's going to be always is going to be his bread and butter. But it was very clear that he's much, much more than that. And you know, and when we were talking about comparisons for him and stuff, you know, I wondered. I said like Klay Thompson must be a guy you kind of looked at. They were like the guy that came back with is Gordon Hayward, and not Gordon Hayward. He's kind of petered out, you know, last 4 or 5 years, but. You know, the all-star Gordon Hayward, a guy who could put it on the floor, could create, could pass, could penetrate, could finish at the rim, and could shoot. And you know, they see Grady as a very well-rounded, all-round offensive player. He certainly showed plenty of signs of that, and I think he's going to be a really interesting guy to watch this summer at Summer League and into training camp next year, because I think he's perfectly suited for playing with Scotty Barnes. I think he's perfectly suited for playing for Darko Raković. And I think you know he's at that age, knowing 20-year-olds, you know, these guys get stronger almost by the month. And you know, I think he's you know he's going to see a lot of benefits of a full year of professional basketball when he comes around in the summer and then into training camp.
And one player obviously who took the leap and kind of went through the growing pains in year two was Scotty Barnes, became an all-star. And I'm just curious, like you, I know
Year
you
three for
want
Scott. Year three.
year
Year two,
three, sorry.
the year
Yeah, no, year two, no, yeah, exactly. And he's going into year four, just to clarify for my mind. You obviously, I know you watch the playoffs and you see the duo of Brown and Tatum, and not that he's a similar player, but when you watch that, how do you think maybe in the his game can get to a level where he can be very effective in the playoffs, and maybe what's those like next steps for him to kind of take heading into to year four?
I think he has to keep, you know, growing the stuff that he demonstrated various parts this year. I mean, he's, you know, he doesn't have to be like an elite knockdown shooter, but he has to be like I think the better he can shoot, the more it opens up the rest of his game. You know, I think he needs to be a tighter ball handler so he can kind of, as the defensive attention kind of increases, that he can manage it. You know, I think I'd like to see him be a more I guess a more, just a better sit down on ball defender. Like that's not something he does real great. But we knew that already. And so it's a matter of him kind of committing to improving in those areas. But it's interesting you mentioned the playoffs. I mean, the one thing, and I'd say the reason for so much excitement around Scottie is the guy is, he's kind of un-game plannable. You know, he plays with so much feel, and so much kind of just the ability. It's not like he's not a high IQ player. He obviously is a very high IQ player, but you know, the level above that is he's completely free and confident to break the script at any time. And you see it offensively, he just goes and makes plays, and he puts his shoulders through people and puts people in the basket. And you know, he's, you know, in the passes, obviously. So like that's If the Raptors can build a team around him that's playoff worthy, I think he's a guy who should shine in the playoffs, actually. And then, of course, the where that's most obvious, I think, so far is, he's got some flaws defensively, but he is an incredible playmaking defender. Just incredible. And that's just instinct, feel, believing in what you're seeing and not even thinking, just reacting. And of course, that incredible like collection of athletic toolbox to make it all happen. So again, when you talk about winning games at in really tough situations, like it's not about it's always about execution, but the difference is always the guy who can rise above when you've got two teams equal executing at a high level. And that's why Shea's great. That's why, I think Scotty's got a chance. We'll see if, some of these other things come along. I think he'll need help. Like, he's not a guy I don't think you can just,
He's
give you
not Victor.
35 and take everyone. Like, he's not Luka. But I think he's if the core around him is good, I think he can shine.
How do you think this offseason the Raptors will try to kind of build around Scottie Barnes? They have Bruce Brown, that there's a decision there. Probably, I'd imagine they trade him in some fashion. But what do you think they do this offseason? Gary Trent's a free agent, and they'll have a bit of cap space to play with as well.
Yeah, I wish I knew.
Breaking
they're not
news.
in a situation now where they're kind of sharing a lot of their plans, which suggests to me they probably are trying to work on some stuff. I don't get the sense that Bruce Brown is, I think they probably will pick his up his option, but I don't think they have plans to, I think they'll do that with an aim towards trading him. I mean, I'm not sure what that gets you. The Gary Trent one is interesting because he's not a perfect basketball player, but what he does well is very, very hard to replace. And certainly Raptors don't have any kind of obvious replacement for it. But the flip side is, I think there's I think as much as coming to agreement on dollar and term with Gary is coming to agreement on role. And Gary's just 25, maybe just turning 26, I think. So I think he's not in a position where he's like, yeah, I'm happy playing 20 minutes a night and I'll do what you need for me. I mean, he's always done that. Don't get me wrong. He's pretty good soldier, but I'm sure if he has an opportunity to go start and so-called bet on himself, I'm sure he'd want to take it. So I think that's going to be a tricky one because if he goes, there is another good player, not a great player, but a good player with a very definable, useful skill that leaves your organization for nothing. And that's you can only like we've seen what happens when you keep doing that over and over again.
And as well, they of course have Emmanuel quickly up. Do you think, like, I'd imagine a deal gets done, but what kind of range are we talking
I think
for?
it's going to be expensive. Like it's a little bit like you see what's going on with OG and the Knicks. I mean, he's got them over a barrel, right? They gave up a lot to get him. He's got I'm talking about OG now, but it's true also of quickly. But in OG's case, they gave up a ton to get him. He's very integral to their potential as a championship team, like crucial. And he's demonstrated that he can absolutely change games, win playoff games. And if I'm his management, I'm like, well, why wouldn't you max this guy? He's way better than a lot of guys who are on max deals. It's just because he doesn't go 25 points a night. And so, so to get it back to quick. So in other words, the Knicks are probably gonna pay more than they thought they might have, and probably more than they want to, or someone else will. And quickly isn't exactly in that same situation, but for the same set of circumstances, the Raptors gave up a lot to get him. They desperately need him. He is crucial to any kind of competitive on-ramp this team is trying to build. And he's would be valuable around the league. There's a lot of teams I'm sure would love to have Emmanuel quickly. you can't, it's going to be expensive. Like you're not going to get a discount. So is that 30 million a year? Is it 35? I don't know, but it's not going to be, I would believe you're going to look at that contract and go, wow, that's a big contract. And, but that's what it's going to take.
This is a bit inside baseball, or I guess in this case, basketball, but I'm just curious how you think the new CBA is going to maybe affect some of these negotiations, because there is that second apron now and a bit tighter restrictions. Like, do you think we're going to see that this offseason in terms of like a quickly an OG, or is it
I
more
mean,
the
a lot of people are suggesting that, or a lot of people think it's going to be a very busy summer because you've got teams that are either are kind of at or near that second apron, and they got to try and get out of it. Like Minnesota is one, are they going to be able to keep Towns? You kind of there's a few other teams in that category, so there could be some players in play that wouldn't ordinarily people might just eat the tax now, even if they want to spend the money, it's. Now it's really affecting your opportunity to even do business. So there's that. I think it's kind of created, very intentionally on the owner's part, maybe by accident on the player's part. I'm not sure. It's created kind of a hard cap where you pretty much are limited to two max guys and as much quality as you can afford around them. So that is gonna kind of be a consideration. I think it should depress the market a little bit, but the flip side is if you don't have guys who are max quality players, you've got to get them, and so somebody's going to get paid.
Obviously, you talk about quickly RJ Barrett, and we talked about how well he played for the Raptors when he got to Toronto. How much do you think that is, or the real deal, that him shooting like close to 40% from three and just scoring every which way and at the rim is the real deal, and how much of it is maybe just a sh short sample size? I'd imagine it's maybe a bit of both, but what do you think of RJ Barrett's game right now heading into?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say it's more likely repeatable than not. It might not be quite. I'd have to pull up his numbers, but I think he was close to 60% from the floor or something, right?
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah,
Over 40% from three.
I think
So,
seven. Yeah.
yeah, there's probably going to be a little bit of regression there, but I think the way the Raptors play, kind of got RJ a lot of, I'm not gonna say easy buckets, but a lot of opportunities to score in ways that suit him. And so, and I think once once you so he wouldn't have to wait for people all the time. I think with the Knicks, where the problem is it's the ball's in other people's hands all the time. He's kind of stuck in the corner or stuck on the wing, and kind of waiting. And that's not really that doesn't really suit him. Catch and shoot's not really his game. Especially if he's not complementing it with all these other opportunities. So I'm fairly bullish. I mean, I think he's, I believe in RJ. Let's put it that way. I mean, I just think he's a guy who, again, you go to unshakable confidence. He's got
Yeah,
his
that's
confidence does not shake.
nope.
And and I mean that in the highest compliment, right? Like these jobs, it's so competitive that if you're wandering around not thinking, you can do this, you're not going to do it. And and so a guy like him who's been through the wars, who's sort of played in a market like New York, who's kind of had to fight for minutes and opportunities and shots, and been scrutinized when he has got them, like that guy's he's fine, you know what I mean? And so I think he's a hard worker, I think he's a smart worker. And I think I'd be more inclined to see him be a 20-point scorer with a good level of efficiency than regress to maybe some of his poorer periods in his career when he hasn't played scored as efficiently. But he's got to become a much better defender too. Like another thing too, right? Like I mean, like everyone wants to be a winner, but like one-way players. Unless you are Luka Doncic, they don't win. And we all saw what happened to Luka in the playoffs too. So so that's a, he's still young in his career, RJ, and he's got to really commit to and accept the notion that he's got to be a much more determined and consistent defensive player.
I thought it was interesting just how Joe Mazz in Boston, kind of the everyone's opinions of him flipped after winning a championship, and that's typically what happens. But last year, people were kind of blaming Joe Mazzulla for the Celtics losing to the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. I see a bit of parallels to some extent. I don't think the Raptors are winning the championship next season, but with Darko Rajakovic, where a coach comes in, first year a bit bumpy, first year on the job, and then the second year they kind of learn the trade a little bit. How much do you think that might happen here with Darko heading into year two?
I think Darko, it's probably not how he wanted to do it, but I think in a way he caught a huge break. He got a mulligan almost on his first NBA season as head coach. Nobody can attach that record to him. And I think he, in doing that, sometimes when a team goes south like that, the coach is part of the problem. Players kind of tune him out, quit, whatever it might be, and you're toast. Like, you are what your record is. But I think in this case, Darko got the opportunity to really connect and build relationships and prove to be an advocate for his players and have, his development strategies, I think, were evident and accepted. And then when the results weren't there, through no fault of his own, injuries, we all know what happened. He kind of gets a pass on that. And so this year he comes in with a year of head coach under his belt, which is huge. Another, a full year, 18 months of, building out the organization, the style he wants to play, and the way he wants his team to run in all facets. And then he should have a healthy roster next year. That's a little bit better. And so, do I think the Raptors are, going to make the Eastern Conference Finals? No, I don't. But, for the purposes of Darko Rajkovic, could they win 39 games? Yeah, they probably could. Maybe 37, maybe 41. I don't know. But any of those numbers is a lot better than, what was it, 24?
24,
So,
yeah.
I mean, like, I think if he just gets his team into the hunt for the play-in, 10th place, 9th place, 8th place, he's going to look as like a, wow, this guy's really coming to his own as an NBA head coach. And not a lot of young coaches kind of get that grace. So I think in a weird way, this year kind of worked out well for him.
Obviously the draft is upcoming, and the Raptors tried to tank and it didn't really work out, or maybe it did in a sense for they have their pick for next season. What I know they have the 19th and 31st pick, but yeah, I mean you never know who they're going to draft. It's too
I am not going to sit here and try and
no
tell you
no
who should or can't or might, or like, I'm just not going to bother.
yeah
There's just too
no
many names. There's too many
many names.
people. I guarantee you they don't know necessarily who they're going to get. And the one thing you hear about this draft, just like you have heard, I'm sure, is maybe there's not the star talent, but there's a lot of quality, kind of rotation level players dispersed maybe deeper in the draft than some other years. So maybe it's a good year to be picking 19th and 31st. Who knows? But the facts are this team has not found players outside of the lottery for some time now, outside of, and so that was the key to their success when they won a title. And they're going to need to hit on these picks and add like athletic capital to their organization. And if they don't, they're going to continue to kind of sort of flounder.
With that, just how do you think having the pick for next season now, with obviously their pick this year conveyed to San Antonio as part of the Poeltl trade, how much do you think that'll change or affect next season in terms of how they go about it? Will they tank for Cooper Flagg? Probably not. But do you think that how much does that change the calculus for but Masai and Bobby?
It doesn't. I mean, that's a little bit the problem with this whole scenario is they're going to be too good to tank. You saw what it took for them to tank this year. And it was basically they completely gave up on the last 2 months of the season. Part of that was injuries, part of that was tragedies. But even in those, even finishing 2-19, they weren't picking third. When you look at this, barring a repeat of the kind of injuries they suffered last year, I don't think this team is going to be anywhere near, the top, half of the lottery. And so you're relying on the draft being deep enough that you can find a player at 11, 12, 14, whatever it is, that can really be a difference maker. The facts are, you're way more likely to find a difference maker in the top 2, 3, 4 picks of the draft. That's just how it goes. Boston just won a championship. Brad Stevens, GM, made every smart move you could make transactionally over the past 2, 3 years. But the reason they're in that position is because they drafted Jason Tatum 3, Jaylen Brown 3, Marcus Smart at 6, and then they hit on almost all their other picks further down the draft order when as the team improved. So, I mean, I that's just sort of my concern is, and it's not really a concern, like whatever. But my observation is that, it's kind of hard to build a championship team without, more than one star. They firmly believe that Scottie Barnes is their Giannis, their Luka, their
Okay.
Jokic, Joker, like he's the guy they think they can that can take them to the promised land. We'll see. The people who believe that are way smarter about basketball than I am. But it's still more difficult to build, to find elite players further down the draft. So I mean, if you were doing this by design, if you're going to roll it all back, I think they probably should have been tanking. This should have been the second year of their tank. And you'd kind of maybe be at the top of this draft. You have Grady from last year. He's and then next year you'd hopefully you'd be in the conversation at the bottom end of a really good draft. But that's not what's happened. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that, and so they're gonna have to try and figure out how to do it another way. The bright side is they've done it the other way before, so we'll see.
I was going to ask you just, to let you go. And thanks again for taking so much time for this podcast. Was just, what is the hope? Like, it feels like it's been a rudderless ship for a little while now, just with everything going on. But is it just you get Scotty, you hope you hit a pick at
And Scotty, we
13
trust.
and
All
Scotty?
right. I mean, I think that's it. I mean, I think, look, they have an interesting core of good young players, and Scotty is he's a star. They think he can be a superstar. There's
See.
views independent of the team are mixed on that, but I can see why they think it. And quickly and RJ and Grady. That's a core of guys who should be able to stick together and play together for a long time. And that's in itself is hard to do. So, I can see them being the path to being a play-in team is not all that arduous. The path to being, a team that can go to the conference finals, I'm not sure I see it, but stranger things have happened.
When is Shea a free agent? I need to check that. That's Jamal
Don't That's a
Murray,
long time
maybe.
away. That's a
I know.
long time away.
That's the hope, guys. We need OVO centers where the training camp is. Maybe that's the way to lure them in. But Michael, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. Is there anything you wanna, I know so many people know you, but is there anything you wanna plug or anything coming up that you want kind of people to read? Are you a golf writer now? Are you part of the Golf Writers Association? Is that
No, I mean, I love writing about golf. It's all day games, so it's easy.
There you go. There you
But
go.
it's a nice way to spend a day. But no, nothing to plug. Just looking forward to getting busy with the national team, and I'll be in Vegas for Canada USA, and Raptors Summer League, and be covering the Olympics in some capacity. So we'll see how that goes.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for doing this, and I'm sure it'll be a busy and fun summer for you, and I'll be reading all your stuff, and thanks again for doing this.
Appreciate it, Alex. Take care.